Right, here we are. It's Sunday, July 27th, 1997. We're talking to John Fink, a volunteer in Laos. And I always ask, what's your birth date?
1/21/43.
And where were you born?
In Illinois, Chicago Heights, Illinois.
Chicago Heights, okay. And what were your parents' occupation when you were born?
My dad was a cabinet maker, and my mom was a homemaker.
And did either of them have any college education?
My dad had part of 1 year. I don't know, maybe he had one full graduate and had been a teacher, English and dramatics.
And where did you go to high school?
I grew up in the town that I was lived in, and it was Crete, Illinois.
How do you spell that?
C-R-E-T-E. And it was a Crete Moni High School. It was a union high school between two towns. Mm-hmm. And
what did your parents do there?
My dad was a cabinet maker, and mom raised kids.
And how far is that from Chicago? Is it close to Chicago?
It's about 30 miles south of Chicago.
30 miles south of Chicago.
It used to be an old German farming community. Now it's a suburb of Chicago.
Yeah. It's for me. Thank you. I wanted to ask you, did your parents have any religious background or religious affiliation?
My mother was a PK, preacher's kid. So grandpa was a minister.
What denomination?
It was the Evangelical and Reformed Church, which has been united with...
You observant at all when you were...
Yeah. Young? Yeah, we grew up in that church, and then...
And you still go to church today.
Yeah. When we got to be 12 years old, we went through the confirmation classes, and then we went to was the one both my parents had gone to, and my grandpa had been the minister years before, 5 miles away. It was in another town where they all grew up. All the kids would transfer to the local Methodist church that had a real So I turned Methodist at 12.
You turned Methodist, yes. Did you ever have, were there any influences early in your life that pointed you towards an overseas service or humanitarian work or anything like that? That's funny, it's not running. No, it's a pause, it automatically stops. We're okay.
Always had, you did things in the community, join groups and...
So you're saying that through work, through your church youth groups and things, you got some sense that there was a world beyond rural Illinois.
Yeah.
And would you describe your upbringing just as rural?
A small town.
Small town.
Yeah.
Did you live in town?
Yeah, we lived in town.
And where did you go? You went to high school there.
Right.
And you decided to go to college?
Yeah. I went to the University of Illinois.
Well, that was a good school.
Which was downstate.
And what were you going to major in?
Forestry.
Forestry?
Yeah.
Why forestry?
I don't know for sure, other than the fact that after I was there 3 semesters, I took a introductory forestry course, just sounded interesting, and it was 4 years. I spent 5 years in college altogether to get my
bachelor's degree. Was it a B.S.?
Yeah.
A B.S. in forestry. And how did you meet Linda, by the way?
I met her at college. And after, let's see, I was 4th year of college.
This is so soft that the tape stops when
you, it gets tired of me.
No. When you pause, the tape pauses, and when you start speaking again, sometimes your voice is so low that the tape isn't picking up
stop.
The start until. I think it'll be fine though. We shouldn't worry about it. Don't pay any attention to that. Let me worry about that. So you met her, this is really that important, but why not? Yeah. How did you meet?
There was a, we had a bunch of foresters there, and one of the girls that I had known from something else said that she had some girlfriends that wanted to go on a camping trip somewhere in Illinois during spring break, and did I know of a good place to go? As a forester, I should know all those places. So I asked around and asked some of the professors where you could go and not freeze yourself out. And originally they were going to take a bus from the university to the place, and we found out, gee, you ought to take somebody with a car, because you could see a bunch of other things right in the area, but you'd be a lot more flexible. And you have a car, would you like to go? And I said, I wouldn't go with a bunch of girls, you know, maybe a few other guys also. She said, yeah, invite them. So we ended up taking three carloads of kids. And so we did a lot of camping then. This whole group just did a whole lot of things and spent a lot of time together. And did we go?
And did you get married before you graduated? Or?
No. No, I graduated. I spent 5 years there, and Linda was 2 years behind. So I joined the Forest Service then and went to Cokeville, Wyoming. And she came out in Utah to get further her studies. And she traveled over the mountain from there. And we got married in February then, so it was half a year.
What about IBS?
Their name was on the list of approved organizations for alternative service. Good. And I was wanted to do something. I wanted to serve. I had two brothers that were COs, and neither of them served anywhere. The oldest one, if you were married at that time, you weren't being drafted. And when the younger one came along, you could be drafted being married, but if you had kids, you weren't drafted. So each of them slipped through the cracks, I guess. But they kind of had that hanging over them for a long time, and I didn't want it hanging over me. I wanted to do something, or would like to do something, but I would like to fulfill that obligation, and then I could go ahead and not have to.
When was that you applied for IPS?
Let's see. I graduated in 66, and so I applied probably early in 66, I guess.
And
I was accepted, actually, before we were married, and I had been accepted and assigned to be in Hue, in Vietnam. Would have gone, I don't know, January or July or August of 66, but the Selective Service Board couldn't get their act together. And it was, actually I was in service until June of 67 then. Well, it was the end of February when they finally got it together, and it looked like everything. They had applied, and she'd been accepted as a single person also. And then we got married in February, and then they were not taking married couples in IVS in Vietnam at that time.
Did you know why?
They said because of the security.
Yeah.
Okay. And but they were in Laos, and so they just kind of swished us over to Laos. And
just in many respects, it was a lot more dangerous in Laos than. I mean, you wouldn't know that if pregnant. It wasn't that one would know that. And did you go to an orientation at Harpers Ferry?
Yeah, Harpers Ferry in June, I guess, of 67.
Also, what was Linda? This is an interesting situation because Linda was not just a spouse who was being sent as part of a married couple.
No.
She had already been accepted individually. What was her area of specialty?
She was, I guess, with rural development.
Okay, so you both went to Los Banos.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about the briefing that you got and the training you got, or the orientation?
Not very much.
Most people don't. Well, they thought the socialization was useful. Do you remember who was in your group?
We remember quite a few of them. We had kind of a small group. Those were at Harpers Ferry. Some of them went to Vietnam, and some of them went to Laos. It was about half and half. We don't keep in contact with very many of them that went to Vietnam. I recognize some of the names as being in that group, but as it went to Laos, we've...
And when you got to... Do you remember much about the Los Baños experience? Would you think that was valuable?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a good cultural deal, the country sort of thing.
This was at the...
I have no idea. Yeah, yes. We just went places.
And yes, those cities have grown so much since.
Did what we were told.
Yes.
It was a million miles away from Manila as far as the countryside and all. Mm-hmm.
What was your first impression? Did you fly to Saigon and or Bangkok or and then on to...
Let's see. Philippines, we went to Bangkok. Yeah. Practically all the time we went through Bangkok. Mm-hmm.
And what was your first impression of... You arrived in Vientiane, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So what was your first impression of Laos?
Liked everything. Mm-hmm. It was just a busy town. Mm-hmm. I was used to a small town, and all big towns were kind of glitzy and all.
You found Vientiane in 1967. A big town.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And had one traffic light. Just no, probably had three by the time you got there. But
I don't remember any of them.
Any, right. Yeah. And I just showed a film to my students about what it looked like 2 years ago, and it still looks like a small town. Yeah. But I'm sure.
The only traffic there was the taxis, mm-hmm. and some of the government officials had cars, mm-hmm. and some of the wealthy Chinese had cars, mm-hmm. but it was mostly... motorcycles were popular for those that could afford them.
Mm-hmm. Where were you? Where did you first stay when you were in Vientiane?
At Don Doak.
Right at Don Doak. This is later, so everything's in one place. Yeah. You're just getting up to speed. Did you have PX privileges at the compound?
Yeah, but we didn't use them much.
You know, I can't remember the name of the U.S. Compound that was up there.
One, and there was 11. Uh-huh. We were at the 11 one. Mm-hmm. The 7, I think, was more of a housing area, mm-hmm. just for the 8 officials, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. 11 was the language training area, and they mm-hmm. had...
What was your assignment now that you were in Laos?
Rural development, mm-hmm. and we didn't know what it was, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure we still know what it was.
And that seems to be coming up lately. what were we supposed to do? Did you get your instructions from Lao Ministry or USAID or
through AID? Uh-huh. I don't know that we had any contact with the Lao Ministry. Mm-hmm. Myself, mm-hmm. his job, it turned out to be, was in the collecting handicrafts. We were assigned to Song Hong then, mm-hmm. which was a town 50...
Spell that for the tape.
T-A-T-K-E-K, I guess. Uh-huh. And it was in province. Mm-hmm. It was the big town.
I know, but when you flew...
Savannakhet was the next one south, the next major town south. Uh-huh. And... it was, all these towns were along the one road in Laos, highway number 1 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. It's along there. Mm-hmm. It turns out that they had volunteers, IVS volunteers, about every 50 kilometers along the road. Mm-hmm. And we didn't realize it at the time, but we were sort of the eyes and ears, I think, for you. Uh-huh. Once a day. And if we missed 2 days in a row, they'd send out the local CIA airplane.
Did you get in and out of that town? Did you always fly?
No, we were given a jeep, mm-hmm. and we would actually, the only traveling we did was from the 10 towns that we had responsibilities for. We would travel from there, mm-hmm. and then we would go to Takiak. We're going up to Vientiane. We could either drive up the road, or we could go to Takiak and catch an airline to Savannakhet. And
sounds like security was not much of a concern.
We had no problems at all. We could have been killed any night, probably. One of the towns that we were working with were from Pathet Lao soldiers. Mm-hmm. There was movement all around. The Americans or the, I guess, ours, the roads during the day, mm-hmm. but we never used them at night. Mm-hmm. And the Pathet Lao, their side, if they were on the road at the wrong time, they might come upon something that the people wished they didn't see, mm-hmm. and they would have to do something that they wished they didn't have to do. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a gentleman's agreement to use it during the day, you use it during the night, mm-hmm. and it worked.
You know, I was reading over your form that you filled out last summer, and one village where there were families of the Pathet Lao, mm-hmm. And I always thought, well, maybe that was a good thing. In the sense that everybody knew that, of course,
yeah.
on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
And that probably added to the security in the area because, yeah. you know, you don't mess with our folk, we won't mess with yours. And
the Lao people themselves, a war was all right, but it was nothing to get killed over.
Mm-hmm.
If the Americans wanted to come in and arm you and everything, well, that was great for butchering and shooting at things, mm-hmm. but you don't get killed. While we were there, there was reports that the Pathet Lao were three villages over, and mm-hmm. so they mobilized all the local people and sent them over to check it out. And so they went two valleys over and scoured the valley and didn't find anybody, mm-hmm. which had they gone three valleys over, like they were told, mm-hmm. they would have found something, but then somebody would have been killed, so you didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And actually, the big Plain of Jars deal,
mm-hmm.
there was many, many Lao soldiers that just disappeared in the woods. Mm-hmm. When it appeared that they were going to lose their butts, mm-hmm. They just disappeared in the woods. And Lao soldiers were walking out of the woods for the next 9 months, way down south. Mm-hmm. They would just reappear again. But main way to have a war if you needed a war.
Did that have anything to do with what you were doing?
Not really.
Mm-hmm. How did you view that as someone who was a CO? How did you view your mission in a place that was obviously a war going on?
Yeah. American side really wasn't for the Lao people. The best king they've ever had was a neutralist,
mm-hmm.
and he was truly neutral. He was for the Lao people, mm-hmm. and the American side said, "You need to side with us more than the other side,"
mm-hmm.
and he refused. The only support he could get then was from Red China,
mm-hmm.
and so he went there and got his support from there. So we installed his cousin or nephew or something in to a war. We didn't want half the pie, we wanted three quarters of the pie, and the pie wasn't sympathies with the people and not so many with the American government. Many of the Americans were ugly Americans over there.
Mm-hmm.
Officials that lived in this K-7 area mm-hmm. would get transported to the capital city in a school.
Yourself?
No.
Okay.
But we heard about it.
Uh-huh.
The K-7 compound had real nice houses as far as being built out of bricks and concrete and so, and a big concrete fence around with broken glass shards on the top. And of course, we knew it was not to keep the Lao out, but it was to keep the Americans in, and we thought it was a good idea. We weren't too sympathetic with the whole American.
Well, the most visible American deal there, I mean, besides the guys with the sunglasses and everything, who wouldn't give you your real love, was a big USAID.
Yeah.
Presence. Was Galen working with USAID then? Galen Beery? Do you remember him at all?
I remember the name.
That's about all.
We stayed out in the field, mm-hmm. and we had nothing to do. Some of the others would go to the aid compound, would go swimming there. They had an eating club there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would take advantage of all that,
mm-hmm.
and we did.
The point was that after you stayed, when you first got there, you stayed at Camp 11, mm-hmm. and then you relocated out into
the village, yeah.
And then from there, you spend the whole 2 years? Were you there for 2 years?
We were just there 1 year.
1 year.
I had a back. We were putting up a community center uh-huh. in our town,
mm-hmm.
and as a carpenter, I did a lot of the work there,
mm-hmm.
Helping them. I built a stairway to go up to the second floor of this, and I was putting it up alone, and it slipped off the thing, and it kind of squished my discs.
Uh-huh.
And so, see what needed to be done, and uh-huh. finally, I was sent to the Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines uh-huh. to be operated on.
How did it go?
The operation was good.
Okay.
The captain there, all he did was operations. He was back operations.
Mm-hmm.
He operated 3 days a week. He checked on his past and future patients the other 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he got more experience operating in that situation than as a civilian he would get in years and years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would operate on 4 to 5 people a day.
Mm-hmm. But so, most of those would be casualties from Vietnam?
Most of them, practically everybody else was military. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Well, that was great. You got that.
Yeah, he really knew what he was doing.
Yeah. The did you have any relationship with IVS? I mean, you were out there in the field. Did they check on you? Did you file reports? How did that work?
Yeah, we had to call in once a day. We would start up a generator that was in charge of the Taquek area. Val Peterson had married a girl who happened to come from our village. Mm-hmm. And so he was quite familiar with our village and all, and we would tell him things. Most of the time, me personally, most of the time I spent building a house that we lived in, that we moved into then. It was a bamboo house with wood plank. We started to work on a two-story village community center sort of thing. And that original house we lived in there was an older one, just a... Or in the morning when you woke up, before you could open your eyes, even though you were sleeping under mosquito netting, you had to turn over and brush the termite dust out of your eye sockets, because if you'd open, you'd hear the termites chewing at night. And that type of house was fairly short-lived because of the termites. And actually, Val stepped through the ladder going up there one day. He must have weighed 200 pounds. He was a big guy like them. And he had the welfare of the Lao people in his heart the whole time.
You went out there as community development.
Yeah.
And you were building this center. Did you have any other projects that you adopted?
Yeah,
the
one project we were supposed to be working on was village wells, making an interpreter that spoke Linglish and Lao. And Linda's interpreter didn't speak any English, but just Lao. Actually, the best interpreter that turned out that we had in our village was somebody that spoke no English at all. It was our neighbor. And he learned what Lao we learned and knew, but he was a very good mime and actor. And so he would act things out. And somebody had come to us, one time somebody came to us and was speaking 1,000 miles an hour. We had no idea what was wrong, but we had him tell Chan Men, and then Chan Men would turn around and tell us in our limited Lao what was the problem, and their jeep had died, and it had broken down. And he, well, you know, the jeep, and he made an expression like the thing had died. And you knew exactly what was wrong. And so we told Chan Men what we could do or what all. And then he turned around and told this other fella, and that was it. But he was our best interpreter, actually. And he didn't know any English at all. But the well tiles was one thing. And actually my assistant did most of that while I was building houses. And Praveet, he was a Lao. Actually, he had, his background was Thai as well as Lao, I think. The other operation that we were supposed to be working on was the water seal toilets. And they were the little concrete. We were the only house in our whole village that had an outhouse even. And so we installed one of these water seal toilets as a deck. Fine, although the villagers thought it was stupid to have to go down. We only had one well in the village, plus the river that went through the village. So to go down to the well or go down to the river and carry water up to pour down a hole in the ground was just kind of unbelievable. The pre season came along and the water table was about an inch below the water surface of the ground. It didn't work. And so they were right and we were wrong. So we just, we didn't put well tiles. That was a good deal because just get wells to be not so contaminated.
Anyone in the area making them, the tiles? Or you making
each village made their own
tiles?
Yeah. We would provide the concrete, and they would provide all the labor.
And the concrete would be provided by ID?
Yes.
And did you go on R&R when you were there?
We stayed there most of the time. We stayed in the village.
Didn't go to the White Rose in Bien Chien?
No. The the fellow that had been in our village, assigned to the village before mm-hmm. us, mm-hmm. every weekend he would go to Taquet because that's where other friends were and all. Mm-hmm. And basically, the village said, if you don't play with us, you don't work with us either. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have much reason to go to Taquet. And as a consequence, we got invited to whatever was happening there, mm-hmm. all the bossies and the parties and the weddings and the funerals and so on. So we tried to be a part of the village, and they were very tolerant and accepted us. And with our limited Lao, at first all we could say hello was walk the dirt paths and say hello, and they would say hello back, but that was the start of it. And it got to the point where we could tell jokes in Lao, and they were polite enough to laugh at them at least, so they understood enough that they knew when to laugh, so... Mm-hmm. It was fun. So we actually stayed there. We did not do our shopping in our own village because we would have high-graded the protein for the whole village, probably, mm-hmm. just the two of us. So we would go to Taquet, and if we spent more than $10 worth of money, we couldn't carry it home in our very, very little sent down from Vientiane. Mm-hmm. Most of the volunteers...
What was the name of the actual village you lived in again?
Song Hong.
Oh, could you spell that?
S-O-N-G-H-O-N-G. Actually, there was two villages. Mm-hmm. One on either side of the road there. Mm-hmm. One was Big Song Hong. Song Hong means two rooms. Mm-hmm. There was Big Two Rooms and Little Two Rooms, and we were in the Big Two Rooms. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. You know, it's interesting, but you were there only 1 year. You know, in many respects, that sounds like, I mean, from all the interviews I've done.
We were frustrated because we really didn't know what we should be doing. Or when we first got there, we thought, well, how much do you work or anything? We thought, well, an 8-hour day, 8 to 12 and 1 to 5. Mm-hmm. And it was just the beginning of the hot season. And it took us probably a whole week to realize that by the time we got up for an 8 o'clock start, the village had half their day's work done. Mm-hmm. And by 11 o'clock in the afternoon, if you did anything but lay on your front porch in the shade, the sweat would just roll off you. Mm-hmm. So we adapted quite quickly to doing what we had to do. But from 11 to 2 or so, you just read a book or slept or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you'd go ahead and finish up later in the afternoon, whatever you wanted to do. And but by nightfall, everybody was inside with their shutters drawn and had spirits away. Mm-hmm. And it turned out, well, the bad spirits also meant malaria, mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. And malaria was a big learned to live with it. Incidentally, both Linda and I got malaria over there. She got two different kinds. Mm-hmm. And when we came home, we still got
your volunteers who were in similar. Situation?
Yeah, the Iresons mm-hmm. were pretty similar to us. They lived another 50 kilometers north of us mm-hmm. in a village, Nam Thon. We all stayed in the village. Both of them were much better at languages than we were.
Mm-hmm. What did folk do when you left?
I was in the hospital in the Philippines, mm-hmm. and about that time that I was sent out, the security in the countryside was getting worse, and they were pulling. It was sent to Vientiane for, I don't know, she spent her last month or two.
No, what was your contract, was her contract up then?
No, hers wasn't up.
Well, you had another year, about almost.
We had another year, but I was in the hospital with a back injury, mm-hmm. and they sent me home to the States, and they really didn't have enough jobs for rural development when they couldn't get into the rural areas, right. I guess, so they just kind of phased. Hey, I've ever gotten a notice that says I'm not, that I've been
transitioned. Just only IBS ad.
Yeah.
I have nightmares about that. I've got something like similar to that. I think it's a variation of the you didn't study for, you never did drop that class.
Yeah.
And you have to go and take the final now, yeah. 25 years later, to keep your degree. Nice anxiety dream. Did you look back on that experience generally? What kind of place did it have in your life?
Oh, we loved it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it was frustrating at the time because we really didn't know what we were doing or what we should be doing. Mm-hmm. we didn't know for sure if we were accomplishing what we should be or what all. But it changed our lives for forever. Here in the town, no electricity anywhere in the town other than the generator that we had that we only cranked up when we had the radio. That's the only time we used that shortwave radio. We were the only people in town that had a refrigerator. It was a kerosene-operated refrigerator. Stove that we used for cooking, running water. There was a river that the Hinboon River ran through the town, and that was, and bathing. There was one well in town, so we carted all our water that we needed.
For own food.
Oh, yeah. We did all our own cooking. Yeah. All the beef we ate was water buffalo, which is only butchered after the water buffalo was done in the field, so it was tough. And we tried different ways, and it was always tough.
did you try the Lao recipes for these things?
Quite a bit, yeah. And you could get out of the market at Takek, you could get everything that you can possibly think of water-wise that came out of the river. It was in with the ocean, so you could get shark and turtles and shrimp from an eighth of an inch long to 6 inches long. Eels were popular, all different kinds of fish, clams. One of the most enjoyable things was going to the market and bartering.